TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Faster than forecast. The story ICE tells about climate change. Professor Jason Box. At year's end, 2016, denial of climate change is being promoted at the highest levels of the incoming Trump administration in the U.S. This in spite of the fact that even the coldest parts of planet Earth are now warming at an unprecedented rate. Professor Jason Box is one of the world's experts on the Greenland ice sheet. He's professor in glaciology at the Geological Survey of Denmark and Greenland. He moved to Denmark to be closer to the one field of study that he's dedicated to with a kind of passion and sense of responsibility that is unusual for a tenured professor. While working at the Byrd Polar Research Center at Ohio State University from 2002 to 2012, he began fieldwork on the Greenland ice and has made over 20 expeditions since 1994. He spent more than 1 year on Greenland ice as a result of these expeditions, was for 5 consecutive years the lead author of the Greenland section of NOAA's annual State of the Climate Report, and was a contributing author to the IPCC's 4th assessment report. Jason Box is even known in popular science through his participation in the movie Chasing Ice. Filmmaker James Baylock said that the mission of Chasing Ice was to change history by gathering undeniable evidence of our changing planet. With a team of helpers, Baylock deployed time-lapse cameras across Greenland and the Arctic to capture a multi-year record of the world's melting glaciers. In early October 2016, Professor Jason Box gave a talk in Copenhagen at the opening of a lecture series called Science and Cocktails. The organizers wanted him to explain the physical causes of the melting of the ice sheet and why the current computer models fail to explain the quite frightening acceleration of the Greenland melt. Professor Jason Box.
Unless you're living in a cave or unless you have your head in the sand, you already know that the ice is melting. Let's talk about why that is. We know that it's producing a lot of meltwater that's coming out of these marine glacier fronts. So why is climate heating? Let me underscore that the dominant reason why climate is changing today is that humans have become the dominant agent of change. That wasn't true in the past. Climate changes for a lot of different reasons, but today, humans are dominant, about 4/5 of the change. We're talking about the Anthropocene, right? That's the climate epoch that we began with the Industrial Revolution. I'll get into that. Let me introduce you to our laboratory for the evening, the Greenland Ice Sheet. World's largest island, world's smallest continent, I like to think about it. 3 times the area of France, 81% ice covered. It's not flat. It's got this dome of ice on it that has about 7 meters of sea level equivalent in it. And it's a fantastic laboratory to go to utilize, because it tells us a story. Ice tells us a story. We go there, we make measurements, and the ice lets go of some of its secrets. That's what this story is about. So I got my experience spending the first 11 years installing and maintaining a network of climate stations on the inland ice, about 20 such stations while I was in Colorado. And I moved here in 2013 to help a team support a Danish-funded network of stations. They're situated where the surface melting is the most. So collectively, we have like 40 stations now on ice. They're running around the clock. And each of them is sampling what we call the surface energy budget. We're measuring the energy coming from the sun, the energy from the temperature of the air. We're measuring how fast the ice is melting at the surface. And these stations are designed to get closure on the energy budget so that we can really understand melt, not just monitor it, but what's behind melt. And we've learned so much from these stations and others. It's been fantastic. As we started out high on the inland ice, our attention was captured by melt. And then it's like, oh yeah, these outlet glaciers, there's more than 200 of these, at least a kilometer in width, that terminate in the sea. So we actually have more than a dozen cameras clicking away around Greenland glaciers. But now let me take you to the single largest outlet of this ice sheet reservoir near the settlement of Ilulissat. It drains, this one glacier, about more than 10% of the total movement of ice off of the inland ice. That's about 50 gigatons of ice per year. The production of this glacier, the movement, has more than doubled in the last 15 years because of the retreat of the front of this glacier. It loses an area about twice the size of Manhattan Island. It no longer has an ice shelf on it. It was stable for a long period of time, but then it's unzipped. And we later learned it was actually an ocean trigger that caused this retreat. But it can break away quickly. And this is happening all the time because it's moving forward 30 meters a day, but in an hour or less, it can retreat a kilometer. And that balance of forward motion and back retreat has been, you know, this pattern of retreat. So you can have this mountain of ice detach in just moments. It's actually the fastest glacier in the world. So you've seen the headlines, you know that Greenland is doing something, and a useful way to talk about that is to follow the meltwater. Kind of like in Washington, D.C., if you want to understand what's going on, you follow the money. A glacier will give its secrets if you follow the water. And so that story begins at the surface, where increasing melting produces lakes happening earlier, happening higher on the inland ice. One's about 1.5 kilometers wide. There are hundreds of these lakes. And so it's a melt reservoir that sometimes drains quickly. That water, which has a temperature several degrees higher than the ice internally, that warm water heats the ice internally. Warmer ice is softer. It deforms more easily. And that's one connection and I'll go through a list, how ice is sensitive to climate that are not yet in climate models. The title, Faster Than Forecast, until we simulate ice that gets softer under more water flowing in, we won't be predicting how quickly ice goes away. You see the ice letting this water down to the bed. And the story here, we didn't know this until 2002, that meltwater accelerates the flow by water being incompressible. A kilometer of ice can glide on a thin film of water. So in summer, we see 100% or more speed up of large areas of the inland ice due to this surface meltwater lubrication effect. That's number two that is not yet in climate projections of ice going into the future. Under the ice, it's a complex drainage system. We have a lot of water flowing at the bed. In some areas, that emerges at the front. What's happening here is the water rushing out, forcing a heat exchange between the ocean and the ice. This is flying over some North Greenland outlets where the whole front of this Humboldt Glacier is 110 kilometers of just ice-ocean interaction. And the meltwater that's generated inland flows under again, and you notice how the ice front is retreated there. That's because of the mixing of heat up against the ice. And as the ambient ocean temperatures are increasing, that's forcing a heat exchange between the ice front. And ocean heat content is increasing globally. That warm water gets entrained and forced up against the glacier front. This undercuts the glacier front, reducing flow resistance right at the grounding line where the ice is grounded against bedrock. So it's very sensitive to destabilizing. The ice wants to move forward, and it's being eroded at this point. So very sensitive to ocean warming. This is another factor that's not yet included in the climate projections for the reaction of ice to climate warming. Another factor that models have trouble simulating is a relatively narrow, dark band of bare ice area, because the model grid boxes tend to be like 100 kilometers, and this region is less than that in some areas. So we have to rely on observations, and that's telling us a lot. I think that's factor number five, increasing bare ice area. A sixth factor would be that water flooding crevasses is heavier than the surrounding ice. So if you can keep a crack filled with water, it will drive its way down through ice. The only condition being you need to keep it flooded. And in a warming climate, that condition is being satisfied more often. So that effect we call hydrofracture is what I expect is why this rift on the Petermann Glacier detached during a record warm summer. It was hydrofracture that broke the Petermann Glacier, if you ask me. Proving that is pretty tricky, and we're working on that. We have a new sports car in space. Proud moment for the European Union to have their own new sensor. This is called Sentinel 3. It's seeing the color of ice. The color of snow. It's an ocean color mission. And what's so cool, ice does have color. Let me draw your attention to this dark band in the west. This is after a drought, after a period of 2 months without any snowfall. And the surface of this glacier, the bare ice, takes on the color of a parking lot. It's incredible. I was just blown away to see this with my own eyes. I had no idea. So on the ground, we're maintaining our station. There is some color. It's kind of orange. The darkness you see, it's not dust. It's not soot. It's not black carbon. It's biological. We didn't know this a few years ago. That the surface of the bare ice area, when you get lots of sunshine, produces an algal bloom. You know, I started as a climatologist. It's like, okay, I'll study ice. It's very interesting. That's glaciology. Oh, we need to become oceanographers as well to understand the ocean interaction. Now what's electric is understanding the biology. So glaciology meets biology. We camped for a couple months and made portable spectrometer reflectance measurements. I'm telling you this before we publish it, but it's really exciting. We can sense this stuff remotely, and with the ground measurements, we can confirm what do we see. All right, I'm going to shift from some of those. Those were climate X factors. These were multipliers, not yet in the climate models. This is why ice can go faster than forecast. Unless you're living in a cave or unless you have your head in the sand, you already know that the ice is melting. Let's talk about why that is. Here's a reconstruction since 1840 of the surface runoff from Greenland, and we've got a big increase. It looks like a hockey stick. You've probably heard that term before, to describe this abrupt increase. We know that it's producing a lot of meltwater that's coming out of these marine glacier fronts. So why is climate heating? You probably know a lot about this, but let me underscore that the dominant reason why climate is changing today is that humans have become the dominant agent of change. That wasn't true in the past. Climate changes for a lot of different reasons, but today, humans are dominant, about four-fifths of the change. One of the things that's going on is biomass burning. People are clearing land, but we have increased wildfire also because of desertification, that's drying of continent interiors, very much expected with climate change. It's people and climate change that are burning more biomass. Cement production is not far behind biomass burning in producing greenhouse gases. So we've got, you know, burning of fossil fuels, biomass burning, cement production. And extreme energy, as conventional petroleum dwindles and tar sands become economical, as long as petroleum is at least $40, $50 a barrel, this is economical. OPEC decided to not reduce production, so suddenly this form of extreme energy is not economical right now. Oil companies are doing their best to get this highly profitable, the most profitable substance in the history of money to market, no matter how they can, as long as it's economical. Oil trains or pipelines are a key problem, however, is that it's a matter of time till many of these systems fail, despite the best intentions of the engineers. And we have one disaster after the other, like the worst one in the Gulf of Mexico's history, the Deepwater Horizon disaster that went on for months. And somehow that's not enough for us to quit this dangerous substance. It has produced this abrupt change in atmospheric chemistry. We're now 42% above on the dominant greenhouse gas, above pre-industrial levels. That's a significant change. Also, when you look at this in the last 800,000 years, you see CO2 here off the chart, also with methane. This is abrupt climate change. This is the Anthropocene. There's no precedent for that. The rhetoric that the climate is always changing is total ignorance in context of these observations. So when you put all that together, it turns out that the human-caused agents of climate change, we have some cooling factors from human activity, and we have some warming factors, chiefly CO2. But you add all these up, and you end up in the warming end, and that's equivalent to 1.6 watts per square meter over the whole planet Earth. Think about one of those little Christmas light bulbs shining at 1.6 watts over every square meter of the planet around the year. That's the net radiative forcing. We're heating the world with 1.6 watts light bulbs over every square meter, every second of the year. So the orbital changes had the climate cooling. We were headed into another ice age, but we prevented that from happening. It would have been tough going into an ice age. Thing is, we're going pretty fast in the opposite direction now, arguably too fast, but off we go. What about the next 100 years? It's clear from the Paris Accord that despite increased ambition to aim for plus 1.5, we actually have to do better than that. Because at these levels, we lose ice sheets. Here's a wonderful reconstruction of climate the last 20,000 years. This is sea level. Sea level goes way up after the ice sheets on North America disappeared. The ice sheets over Sweden, Finland, they're gone. Scotland, it was covered in ice. Denmark. So that was this sea level rise. Then we had this amazingly stable sea level for like 8,000 years. And that allowed civilization to develop because the tides were predictable, you could build coastal infrastructure, the ocean wasn't coming and going too fast. And that was fundamental to the development of civilization. Without stable sea level, we would not have stable commerce. And what we're looking at, depending on a couple of scenarios, is abrupt sea level rise is already happening. This is from the place where Hurricane Matthew is hitting right now, actually, North Carolina. They've already had an abrupt increase in sea level, so they've got about this much sea level rise since pre-industrial at that place. Sea level rise is non-uniform, depends on a lot of factors, but as the New York Times put it, flooding of coast caused by global warming has already begun. Nuisance flooding, Miami has already installed pumps. I think, you know, coastal engineers, planners, they're on it, you know, they're doing the best they can. Coastal planners and engineers, they're not the people that decide if we melt the ice sheets. I want to talk somewhat briefly about, okay, how do we tackle this? And the real point is, little tweaks to status quo isn't going to do it. We actually need radical solutions to this problem. That's the only way. Short showers won't get us there. Riding bikes won't get us there. The key challenge, I call this the missing conversation. The conversation, the one you hear, is about reducing emissions, which we need to do. But what about getting from 400 parts per million atmospheric CO2 down below 350? We need to do that, and no one's talking about it. Well, if some people are talking about it. We need to remove CO2. How do we do that? Well, there's this natural technology. We don't need miracle technologies to do this. I was thinking, I actually did the calculation. How much vegetation would we need to plant to sequester 50 parts per million of CO2? And it comes out to about 7 times the area of Australia. But don't despair, because something grows faster than trees and sequesters CO2 about 4 times faster. Does anyone know what that is? He's got it. Weeds grow, sequester 4x faster. I didn't say weed. I said weeds. Weed, now that he said weed. And so that'll take you down to like 1.5 Australias of or so. That's one idea. This one's meant to underscore resistance, because you probably heard, I had students, I asked them, what are the 3 R's? And they came up with things like this, revolution. That's kind of what we need. Yes, that's not kind of what we need. We need a fundamental revolution of our energy systems, our economic systems, agricultural systems, you name it. That's what it's going to take, guys, to get to that future that we need to be in. I want to talk about some other radical stuff. Well, it's radical in today's definition of the world, but it's not radical when you consider what we need to do to reestablish a harmonious relationship with nature. And indigenous people, they know how to do that because they've been doing it for a long time. And we need to learn from the wisdom of indigenous peoples who right now are coming out to try to stop a pipeline in North America. Some Sami people are joining the Native American people, and that's happening right now. E for equality. Yes, in this case, we need equal gender across all leaders on planet Earth. There's only 1 out of 10 heads of state are women. We need that to be in unity. It needs to be 1-to-1. That needs to be, if you ask me, a law. E also stands for empower, especially women of color, women in developing worlds who disproportionately don't have access to the other E, education. And so we need to embrace feminism as a fundamental cure or solution, because it's pretty easy to argue that men have f***ed things up pretty bad and that we need to listen to women a bit more here. I'm talking equal pay. I'm talking equal governance across gender, okay? Here's another radical one. It's called forest schools, primary education. The thing is, you cannot deprogram people at the college level. It's too late. They've already gone off to business school. You gotta teach kids to appreciate nature, and that happens when they're this tall, not this tall.
That was Dr. Jason Box, professor in glaciology at the Geological Survey of Denmark and Greenland. He's considered one of the world's experts on the Greenland ice sheet. Jason Box is even known in popular science through his participation in the movie Chasing Ice. Filmmaker James Baylock said that the mission of Chasing Ice was to change history by gathering undeniable evidence of our changing planet. In a 2013 interview with Rolling Stone, Box said, "The icy island is a perfect laboratory to understand what is happening as CO2 levels rise and the planet warms up. We're heading into uncharted terrain. We are creating a different climate than the Earth has ever seen before." Jason Box spoke in Copenhagen, Denmark, at the opening of a lecture series called Science and Cocktails, where scientists speak in a casual, convivial setting with candlelights. It was recorded on October 8, 2016. A video of the event was published on YouTube on November 3, 2016, under the title Faster Than Forecast: The Story Ice Tells About Climate Change. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Time of useful consciousness is an aeronautical term. It's the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. Time for useful projects to rescue the planet and the plane. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.